This runs on, it works. Okay, good evening, everyone. Let us begin with the Pledge of Allegiance. Can we have the roll call, please?
Good evening, Commissioners. I'll take the roll call. Commissioner Hurd.
Present.
Commissioner Hartwig.
Present.
Commissioner Pitts.
Present.
Commissioner Main.
He is excused.
Thank you. Commissioner Montgomery.
Here.
Commissioner Castillo.
Present.
And Commissioner Garage.
Present.
Thank you.
Okay, do we have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved. Yeah, so moved. I'll second it.
Moved, seconded. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any abstentions? One abstention? Oh, wasn't here. Okay. All those opposed? Okay. Carries unanimously. Okay. Old or unfinished business?
There is none.
Being none, are there any modifications to the agenda?
Yeah, I would like to request that we table item F1 to the next meeting.
Okay. Request to table F1 to the next meeting. Now, do we need to vote on that, or can we just do that?
It can go by consent.
Pardon?
Can it? Yeah.
It can do what?
Yeah, just if nobody objects.
Okay. No objections? All right. So F1 is tabled. Moving then to new business,
Item A is something that we do once a year. It's a public hearing on proposed Oakland Housing Authority fiscal year 2014. And I have to tell you that when we initially did the agenda, it said 2013 on Thursday. We did correct it by the time the 72 hours was required and posted it correctly. It just seems so far in the future. That's all I'm going to say about that typo. So it's the 2014 MTW plan that we submit to HUD. And remember, this is the plan. We are just finishing getting our report approved by HUD. We sent in our final edits today to HUD for the fiscal year 2012 report. So this is the plan that we'll report on in 2016?
15.
15, okay. They operate on a strange timeline in HUD. Anna Gwen Simpson, who does our MTW program coordination throughout the agency, has done an amazing job of pulling this together and simplifying it, making it, I think, more readable and understandable the past couple years, to the point that HUD's now using our format as the national best practice example. And I want to congratulate her on that.
Hey.
Thank you.
Way to go.
And I will turn it over to her to go through some of the significant parts of the plan.
Okay. Good evening, Commissioners. So tonight we're going to go over the fiscal year 2014 MTW plan. So for OHA, we have titled our Moving to Work plan, our Making Transitions Work here at OHA, and we are one of 39 agencies with MTW authority from HUD that recently increased. There were four new agencies that were brought on in the last year, so the number has gone up. We have an agreement currently through fiscal year 2018, and this year, this plan is about the plan that will start July 1, 2013 and go until June 30, 2014. So just a refresher, the statutory objectives of the MTW program are to increase housing choices for low-income families, to provide incentives for families with children to become economically self-sufficient, and to reduce costs and achieve greater cost effectiveness in federal expenditures. So just to give you a snapshot of our housing stock portfolio, starting in 2014, we have 1,605 public housing units, 12,687 vouchers, 709 non-MTW vouchers, which are our VASH vouchers and other special purpose vouchers, and 237 Shelter Plus Care vouchers that we administer for the County of Alameda, for a total of 15,238 vouchers and units combined. And you can see in the pie chart, the obviously the bulk of it are our MTW vouchers, followed by our public housing as the largest percentage of who we're serving. So for this upcoming fiscal year, we're proposing one new MTW activity, which is alternative recertification schedules. And the purpose of this, or the goal behind this activity, is to reduce costs and achieve greater cost effectiveness. It's designed to target that specific goal. So basically, the recertification schedules, currently all households are recertified for their income eligibility once every year. So what we have been doing in the past is we've had an approved activity, which used to be 07-01, which was for triennial income recertifications for elderly and disabled households on fixed incomes. We had implemented that in all of our Section 8 program and at a few of our senior designated public housing properties, but we hadn't sort of fully implemented that portfolio-wide. This also... The purpose of reproposing this activity is also to expand the recertification schedule to include a specific recertification schedule that would be biennial. So in thinking about how to repropose this, one of the things that sort of we realized was that one of the easiest ways or best ways for what we wanted to achieve to sort of break the groups out was by their income type, along the idea that households that have fixed incomes, you know, their income isn't changing, so having a longer period in between income recertifications makes a lot of sense. Their income does not go up and down very drastically year to year. And we know for the most part, if they're on a fixed income source such as Social Security or SSI, we know that there's a cost of living adjustment that's made annually, and it's published by the Social Security Administration, so we do a cost of living adjustment in the interim years for those households. We also wanted to do one that was designed for sort of more work-able or work-eligible households, and that was our biennial recertification schedule. The idea behind this would be any household that has any income from wages, so it doesn't have to be the head of household, it could be another household member that's in the house that has income from wages. They could also have other income sources in the household, such as fixed source, like Social Security or SSI. But if they have wages in the household, they will fall into our biennial category. And those people will be recertified once every 2 years. And then the annual is the sort of traditional model. But we're going to include, under the annual, we're going to keep people on an annual if they don't currently have any income, because our expectation is that that's more likely to change more frequently. No income from wages or income from what I've defined as a temporary source, meaning temporary assistance for needy families, general assistance, child support, unemployment. So the idea was that the people that have the most volatile income sources, we want to be checking their incomes. We want to be recertifying them on an annual basis. We also want to maintain that constant contact with them to try and help them improve their situation. And then the others we're going to do once every 2 years and once every 3 years. In the interim years, for the people on an annual recertification, they're required to report increases in income. But in the biennial and triennial, they're not going to be required to report any increases in income. So if they do, if their income does go up in those interim years, they get to keep that extra savings for themselves. Their rent will not be recalculated again. It won't be reassessed until they get to the point of their next recertification. Any household can report a decrease in income at any time if they would like to. And then they must report changes in household composition. So if they add a new member to the household, they need to report that to us, because then that does affect their recertification. And as I mentioned before, for the triennial recertifications, a cost of living adjustment will be applied to the household's related income subsidy annually. And typically the COLA adjustment is like 2%, around that range. And we have seen years where it's actually been a decrease to the income. So in those times, their rent's actually gone down. So it's either an increase or a decrease, depending on what Social Security publishes. We have a hardship policy, which is basically that any household can request a full rent review at any time if they feel the rent is being calculated incorrectly. And if they, if it turns out they need to switch to a different recertification schedule, we could accommodate that as well. So those are our, that's our hardship policy for that. So just a snapshot of the impacted households, kind of what currently our current participants, where the income, you know, is coming from. In our public housing, the 42% of our households have income coming from a fixed source. So they would be in our triennial recertification schedule. In Section 8, it's actually very, I thought this was kind of interesting. So in Section 8, it's sort of the opposite. 42% are wage earners, and you have about 30% fixed and 30% temporary income. So the majority of our Section 8 households, or a good chunk of them, will be on our biennial schedule. And then you can see just overall all programs. We expect 41% of all households to be on our biennial schedule. Yes.
Yeah, I was just curious. Is the reason for that difference between public housing and Section 8 and Section 8 because we have shifted the mix more to seniors in the public housing?
I don't know that that's the contributing factor. It could be, though. We do have a lot. I mean, our house in the public housing. You're right. It is more. I think it's actually kind of half and half, family and senior, because even though we have less family properties, they're our largest properties.
Yes, but that would be different because Section 8 is probably not split 50-50, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. Okay, so that's a good point. Yeah, that could be that could be what's contributing to that, definitely. So these are our ongoing MTW activities. We currently have 21. There's details about all of them in the plan, so I'm not going to go over each one, but these are things that have been ongoing, approved in previous years. Our budget for this, for fiscal year 14, and this is a preliminary budget, so, well, you don't, the numbers aren't here anyway, but percentage-wise, this shows you kind of the breakdown of where we expect our money to be coming from and what programs we're going to be using it on, with the vast majority in the housing choice vouchers.
And if just to interject the process for the budget, remember this is the sources and uses of what HUD's saying. What we'd like you to do is submit some plan. If you get $8 million in Section 8, $4 million in public housing, $2 million in capital fund, and you can put it all in one pot, then how are you going to divide it up? Mm-hmm. And so this is just that sources and uses on the highest level. But we have made a lot of progress with our budget, and so we'll have the more finalized version in April, but it's our plan. It's not our final budget. Final budget, the board will take action hopefully on the May meeting. All right.
And that is all for my presentation. So I don't know if you have any other questions for me.
I did just want to add one thing. We did get one letter that I'll provide the board and the comment in the April meeting from one of our property owners, Darlene DeVoe, related to some issues. She makes some suggestions and has some issues related to some of our tenants, but I will show you the letter and we'll do a formal response in the April meeting. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted in the record to say that we did receive that.
Yeah.
Commissioner Castillo.
Thank you, Chair. Always we'd love a copy of the PowerPoint by email, if that's,
sure.
That's okay. It's really well done. Thank you, Ms. Anna.
No problem.
I don't believe that it's reflected in this particular document. It's probably in a larger document where we have details, but I was curious, when a family asks for a rent reduction, mm-hmm. how long, in as far as our policy is concerned, do we take to make that reduction real for them?
Before the changes.
And that's all appears actually not in the MTW plan, but
correct.
In its attachments, which is actually where we got the letter from. There are two attachments. One is the housing emissions, or the ACOP, which is the public housing side, and the admin plan, which is the Section 8 side. And that's actually a Section 8 related question. If someone comes in with a rent reduction, they want an interim examination. And Michelle Hassan can answer that for us. She wants to come up. And you can even pull up another chair, Michelle, because there's microphones there now. We're getting very professional with her.
Good evening, Commissioners. Michelle Hassan, Director of Leased Housing. So our policy is for families who are asking for interim changes, 20 business days. The policy says that if someone comes in, for instance, today, March the 3rd, and we have everything, if we don't get done with the interim calculations to the end of March, it still would be effective March 1st. March 1st.
So it's retroactive to what period?
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know, that could be someone just bringing us in their unemployment benefit statement, right? Which is very clear for us, but then with the volume that we have, it may take us the full 20 business days to get it done.
And as you can imagine, the reason I ask that is that tragedy happens to our families in a serious decrease in incomes occur, and being able to bring that rent down is probably very, very good for them. Thank you very much, Ms. Michelle.
Commissioner Montgomery.
Yeah, I just need a little explanation on the mainstream Section 8 vouchers, and also pulled out vouchers. I need a little clarification on that.
So mainstream vouchers are actually for families that have a disabled head and head of household.
Okay.
So those families would have a head of household who has a disabled status. Port out vouchers are families who are requesting to port out of our jurisdiction to any other place in the United States.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Commissioner Hurt. Okay.
And my question is related to the RIN pilot program. I know we talked about that last year. How many residents do we have on that program?
So that program is currently on hold because we ran into a lot of challenges with our business system in terms of how we would track and monitor and actually collect the data on those households and keep it to the level we need it to be in order for our compliance. So we're in the process of looking into switching our business systems. So what we've decided to do is incorporate that we want to do this rent reform model as part of looking at those business systems to make sure that we can get something that will be able to accommodate these types of changes.
And I should add, that was the same, HUD was out asking similar questions about that and related to the challenges of the business system. And there's a study going on now that is funded by HUD, and we're not going to participate in it, but they're approaching MTW agencies to do rent reform studies. The reason we've chosen not to is, one, exactly what you just heard.
Yeah.
We couldn't accommodate it. Turns out that's pretty common across the country. So we're hoping to change that in the next year by going out to RFP this year, selecting someone, and we'll talk about that in the budget process.
Okay.
So we can maybe have some more flexibility because it's something that everybody's encountering in this program.
Yes.
When you only have 35 agencies, we don't drive the business systems, and they're created so that you can't do what we want them to do, to protect those agencies from making mistakes. And so we continually either have to override or find a way to make our current programs work even. But we want something that can be much more flexible and easier for us to control. So it's going to be an interesting year getting that out today.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So what I'd ask is just open and close the public comment, if you can, Chair.
I thought Commissioner Hurt had some more questions. You're finished?
Well, since it's going to be on hold,
Okay. Very good. So we're doing what now?
You open and close. The next two, items are public hearings. So just open and close the public hearing. There's no speakers that I have on.
Okay. So we are opening the public hearing. Hearing no speakers, we are closing the public hearing. And thank you all so much.
Fine
job. Excellent presentation. So moving now to item B.
Item B is also a public hearing on a proposed changes to the admission and continued occupancy policy for the public housing program. This goes alongside the MTW annual plan that we submit. We have Tony is our new staff attorney, Tony Rush, is here, has corrected mostly grammatical errors throughout the document, but there were some significant changes that he recommended. And we went over them and we just decided to put them out. We haven't received any written comments on them that I'm aware of, right, Anna Gwen? No. So we're just open and close. He can review any of the changes if you'd like or have any questions. They deal with actually putting into the document our current practices. For example, posting of rent is the way we've always done it. We wanted to be just clear about it. We haven't really gotten someone who could do this for us as quickly as Tony has, and I'm happy to bring some significant, but not necessarily changes in any of our business practices to you. If you want, we can go over each one, or we can answer questions.
Commissioner Underbrock.
Just one minor question on page 14. 14-22. So it says final, the decision of any hearing officer shall be binding on OHA, which shall take all actions or refrain from any actions necessary to carry the decisions unless the OHA Board of Commissioners determines within a reasonable time and promptly notifies the complainant of its determination that, then there's the grievance clause and then the decision clause. Is that an or an and in between those?
Is that the first bullet point?
So there's what I read, then it says, that ends with that, colon. The grievances are concerned OHA, blah, blah, blah. And then the next one says the decision of the hearing officer is contrary to applicable federal statute. They're just two clauses. I just don't know if they're connected by an or an and.
This is basically directed straight out of the CFR, so I could look at it and get back to you.
This is a quote from the CFR that we've included, right?
Yeah.
And so what the top the section is, yeah, so we'll look at that, because okay. Jennifer was just pointing out, it's our OHA's policy is what we're changing, not the CFR. And right. I'm not sure why we really listed it anyway, except NAMA case template always did, and I think you've just included a correction to that language, and we can find out where the correction is. The policy, though, is it goes to the ED or their designee within 10 days and always has.
Right.
And that's the OHA policy.
Right. It's just okay. Unclear how it's written.
Yeah. So we'll take one look at that okay. Before we come back. All okay.
Right. Any further questions? Okay, then we will open for public comment. Hearing no comments, we will close for public comment. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we're moving on now to item C.
Item C is consideration of a resolution to authorize the execution of documents and actions related to financing and development construction of Lakeside Senior Apartments, quote, the Lakeside Project.
So
you want to recuse yourself?
Yes.
Okay.
So I'm gonna. Okay. So I'm an employee of Bridge Housing. And so I am going to recuse myself from items C and D.
All right, we'll note that. So item C, Phil can give us, Phil Neville, Deputy Executive Director, can give us a quick review of these. We actually tabled these to make sure we got the recusal on the record for the first time. They're not authorizing any additional funding for us, but we are definitely interested in entertaining any questions the board would have that aren't covered in the board report. But Phil, why don't you describe what we're doing here very quickly?
Thank you, Eric. Since I've been identified, let me just point out that we have in the audience tonight Susan Friedland, who's the executive director, CEO of the new combined entity Satellite Affordable Housing Associates, and she's here with Cindy Heavens from the same organization, who's our project manager, and of course next to them is Denny Adania, our own project manager on this project. I want to say too, Eric, that this development team has done an excellent job of turning over every rock to find available funds out there. They've worked very hard to get the state Prop 1C MHP funds for supportive housing, which is very helpful. We've discussed in the past that may correct a management, that may bring to bear a management challenge, but they did great work. They got the affordable housing funds, AHP funds, from the Federal Home Loan Bank, and we're very pleased at the way they were able to get 9% tax credits, which is the preferred type, the most competitive type. And it's due to that award that we have a very unforgiving deadline coming up in early April. We have to have our construction closing by the end of March, early April, or we lose the money and get sanctioned and everything else. So we're bringing this item to you for the last time. I've checked the record. You've passed 8 resolutions dating back to 2009 as we assembled the parcels and as we approved the partnership with Satellite, brought in our own entity, Oakland Housing Initiatives, Inc., who will meet on this same matter tomorrow at noon. And it's gone very well. So if there are any questions, either I can take it or we can bring up the people in the audience who put this together.
Pardon? No, I don't think we have any questions.
Move the item.
So we have a motion. Mm-hmm. We have a second. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Any abstentions? Carries unanimously.
Great. Thank you, Commissioners.
So we are now moving on to item D.
Item D is consideration of a resolution with respect to bond financing of a multifamily rental housing development to be known as 460 Grand Avenue, declaring its intent to reimburse certain expenditures from proceeds of indebtedness and authorizing related actions. This is a property that I think is going to be one of the gems in the OHA portfolio for family housing, located at 460 Grand near Adams Point across from the Lake Merritt. It's really just a choice neighborhood, and I want to congratulate Phil for coming this far along with Bridge, the partner in development. This is a bond issuance. The Housing Authority risk in issuing these bonds is really just related to the property, correct, Phil?
Correct. So we have in the audience tonight Joe McCarthy, who's representing Bridge Housing Corporation, and Bridget Galka, who's on the other side, our project manager for this project. And it is true that we're here primarily for a financing resolution tonight. This project just missed getting 9% credits. And I think Satellite Affordable Housing Associates showed them no mercy by scraping the highest tiebreaker possible and ensuring that we couldn't get this one funded through the 9% program. So we're going for bonds and 4% credits, and the application is due this week. We actually have documents for your executive director to sign tonight if you pass this, so we can make our application deadline. I don't want to count my chickens before they're hatched, but if there are any questions, Joe and Bridget are here in the audience tonight to answer them.
Questions? Hey, I have one. What will the distribution of the net cash flows be?
On this project, the spreadsheet attached in your packet, we can kind of walk it through. It shows a 5-year cash flow, kind of the first years in the project. And
no, I just want to know where they go, who gets what.
Oh.
Like year one is, I think, $36 million, if my eyes are working well enough, and then so on and so forth.
Well, no, it's, there's not that kind of money available. Are we looking at the same spreadsheet? Thank you. No, it's about it runs about $50,000 a year.
Yeah.
And you'll see the spread here, but let me just drill down and see if my glasses are working. And Joe and Bridget, you want to wander up this way? That would be helpful. Let's talk about the cash flow split.
You have that?
It's not represented here, but it would match the split on the developer fee, which would be 50-50.
Oh, okay.
So that's the assumption currently.
And the 50-50 is between Bridge and then the Oakland Housing Authority OHI. And so then you have the OHI-Oakland Housing Authority split, correct? No.
No OHI.
Oh, that's Lakeside. I'm sorry.
That was the last one.
I interjected too. I speak too quickly.
Too many subsidiaries.
Stick around.
Okay. That's just us.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, that answers my question.
Okay.
Good. Thank you. Oh, Commissioner Prince. Okay, item moved.
I'll second it.
Item seconded. All those in favor.
With an appreciation for our developer partners that they come and spend time with us this evening. Thank you so much for showing up.
Indeed. Okay, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed? Any abstentions? Carries unanimously.
Great, thank you. Can we let Commissioner Nagraj know that we're done. And I want to congratulate the board for taking these actions. This is going to mean we break ground on 3 new developments, a historic first for OHA this year.
Yeah, you can. Commissioner Hurd would like to make a comment.
I want to thank you for increasing the 3 bedrooms. We need more of those, and I really appreciate you doing that. Okay? Thank you.
Okay, so now we're on to item E.
Item E is consideration of a resolution authorizing the executive director to execute an intergovernmental agreement with the City of Oakland to provide funding for up to 300 youth in the amount of $1,500 per youth to participate in the mayor's summer youth employment program, and authorize amendments to the fiscal year 2013 budget to use unspent staff and contract funds to be used for this agreement in an amount up to $450,000. This is an item I mentioned last month that I wanted to bring forward. Oddly, the minute I finished typing it, I started getting emails about sequestration. and although that, there are impacts of that, and we're going to talk about that a little bit during my comments and then more next month when we know what it means. What we've done, as you know, is position us to try and have any soft landing should sequestration occur. And we're running those numbers and what that looks like, and we'll know more next month. What dawned on me is that although we don't have money to budget for this in the year, we've had a year where we've had a director of property management be vacant for a year, where I've had a finance director be vacant, where I have quality control and MTW position vacant, and we've had a couple assistant directors that have been vacant for half a year, and very quickly you can get to $450,000 of salary savings that are available now. Some of those positions now are filled, so it's only a one-time thing. And I just was trying to figure out what would be the best thing to bring forward and what would be the most meaningful thing, I think, to impact our residents and particularly our youth this summer. And this is such a good bargain for us financially. But beyond that, as you know, summer youth employment for me is one of the most essential things we can do for the youth growing up. I made calls before I brought this forward and before I considered this last month to the people who do the program, because we did a lot of outreach last year. And there were the city estimates there was about 1,000 youth hired. But from my calls, I could only confirm OHA youth that were hired in about 38 kids. There were more that participated, but we don't have that. They didn't just self-disclose, so we didn't capture it. What it also means is we can't direct some of the youth we were working with directly into the summer youth program. And so not only would this provide access to up to 300 youth, we can actually take youth that we're already working with and make sure that they get a summer youth employment experience. One of the things we're planning right now is the demolition that one of our affiliated nonprofits, CAHI, is doing of 77th and Bancroft. We're going to have a number of youth who are going to be these docents in an art project that's going to go on the first 2 weeks in June. And we want every one of them then to participate in summer youth employment. And I need to make sure that they can do that, that we can transition them. In the agreement that you're going to hopefully give me permission to do tonight is to negotiate with the city, so we will do direct referrals of our residents, and then we'll pay for their participation so the city can do that. I have met with John Bailey, who's the executive director of the Workforce Investment Board, who's here tonight, and he's assured me he thinks he can handle the capacity of this. That was one of my worries. I didn't want them overwhelmed. I wanted to make sure there were jobs. And I think having us help with some of the referrals and enrollment will help him a long way. This will allow the other corporate sponsors, Bank of America, I think was most recently one of the large donors, money to go to even more residents. And we will still participate and help with outreach fairs. But what we're going to do is, through family and community partnerships, and Lanita and her troops are going to get out and try and target and do direct referrals to the program for a guaranteed job. I can't think of any better way to spend these savings myself, and I just ask for your approval.
Commissioner? Yeah, I just have one question. How many youth do you actually anticipate from OHA we will be able to serve? Do you guys anticipate doing the 300, or?
I anticipate us doing the full 300, and I anticipate the city doing more.
Okay.
Because if we get over 300, then I'm sure that John will appreciate the pre-screened and eligibility of our families.
Okay, we have the capacity to turn out 300 folks.
I think through direct mailing, because remember, we can use our database, and we can directly mail to all of our families who have youth those ages with something they can return to family and community partnerships directly saying, yes, I want to participate, and then we can check it and return it over to the city. And it's a direct, what I'm talking about doing is a direct mail marketing campaign for summer youth employment to our families.
Excellent, and that will track it, so we will know internally how it did. We'll be able to measure it.
Yep, they're going to go through family and community partnerships, how many people. Wonderful. The city doesn't really, it's similar to, it's all our, it's, if we were to ask them to track all our families, it's just a huge extra burden for them. And I understand that, because we get that all the time from kind of unfunded mandates we talk about. Mm-hmm. And they don't have, they barely have the money to put on the program, let alone to do that kind of extra analysis. Do you want to say a few words, Mr.?
Good evening, Commissioners. My name is John Bailey. I'm the Executive Director of the Oakland's Workforce Investment Board. Just very briefly, I am very excited about this possibility. The whole summer program is made up of a tapestry of funding sources. There isn't one pot that today is able to support the funding opportunities for the youth that we have. This is a tremendous boost. We are looking at reaching out to our own Workforce Investment Board in support. The mayor has set a very high bar this year, and she is very committed. Every time she's out and about speaking, particularly to businesses, I've got to make sure that she's got a soundbite about the Mayor's Summer Job Program. She's aggressively pushing that, and we're setting that bar at her number to at least 2,000 youth this year, and doing this without, as you know, without any federal money that was dried up about three years ago to us. So my commitment to Eric when we talked about this was to make sure that we had in place that connect piece that worked with his staff as they're identified to make sure they have the soft skill portion that they need before they're set into a work job opportunity. We want this to be a rewarding experience for them, but we also want it to be very successful for the entity that they're working for so that we can get a return on that. It's a good experience for them. They'll be willing to hire other youth of the next layer. So our commitment is to put that bridge in so that once the youth are identified, then we give them some soft skill training before then they're matched up with an employer opportunity.
Thank you. Commissioner Nagler.
Thank you for that.
Yes, sir.
More in-depth explanation. I did want to know what are the kind of the metrics of evaluation that the summer youth program is going to use? Just seeing, you know, they're going to have a diverse array of experiences. How you know, measuring enjoyability of their summer, whether they think it could lead to permanent jobs one day, or really was it a contained 3-month job experience? You know, satisfaction. Is there any kind of end of the summer survey or any kind of metrics you're using? And if so, I think it'd be helpful if we also could share in that at the end of the summer, just so we can also measure effectiveness of, you know, $450,000 investment, just making sure that they're also getting kind of the best experience that they possibly can.
Okay. Let me say one of the things that this is doing for us, with me having to step to the mic, is acknowledging the fact that that historically has been a piece that's been missed in our program structure. A accurate data collection piece that acknowledges all of the placements. There will be a front-end survey that helps determine what the young person's interest might be. There is an effort, depending on what funds they qualify for, to place them in the appropriate setting. In addition to that, then there's through working with the employer, follow-on tracking through their employment, so we just don't drop them and walk away. And then thirdly, on the back end of this, so that we are tracking, there will be a survey taken of the experience for the employer and also for the youth, so that we can match to see what was that actual value. Did we do well, and what kinds of things do we need to do to tweak and improve the system?
Yeah, and I'm imagining even after the summer, you know, it'd be great to hear from some of the youth themselves about their experience, and then to wrap that into any kind of survey feedback would be really great.
I would hope out of this, something that we've been looking at, and I know the mayor has this very much on her agenda, is the opportunity to turn a number of these without a target number mentioned into year-round intern programs. That's something that she has put on the calendar. It's something that we're being asked to take a look at. So we're looking at this summer hire program and then also an opportunity for a year-round program that have a career ladder relationship to them for them.
Sorry, and if you haven't already, can you just give us the examples of types of jobs, types of positions that you're looking at for the summer?
It ranges from jobs within the city, within the fiscal financial department, within HSA, GHS, within the fire department, the police department, in contracts, and then outsourcing with businesses who are now sending in their requests for different individuals. I can think of one program in particular that both Public Works has and the planning department where young people go out and do some of the street surveys that we need. And so this is getting them into kind of a career path opportunity where they would make some course selections in high school as they're looking at college or community college opportunities. So it's a broad range of opportunities, and we're still developing that portfolio.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Montgomery.
Yes, the age limit, I'm looking at youth, but do you still go to 21?
We do. Okay. We do. We would work with OHA on in terms of their requirement. I don't go today below 16. Mm-hmm. This was something that our workforce board voted on last year. We did before go down to 14, but as you can imagine, that range of 14 to 15 has a particular handling need, and we didn't feel that presently our infrastructure could address that. And there were a number of other agencies who were looking at that age group, so we took a step back and made our bottom line age at the age of 16.
One of the challenges we have in participating in the program as an employer is supervision. And when you go to 14, 15, and even 16 can be a challenge. It's still a challenge at 17, 18, and 19 oftentimes.
Yes.
But it's such 53. But I, you know, so we agree with the city on that perspective because we don't want to be as it. We take some on in some of our sites and some of our internships come from this program and we hire our own and we'll do that. But our challenge is just providing supervision. If there's a way that I could find that we could employ directly 300 youth in this agency, I would do that for the
yes.
summer. I just can't do it, so I need the city's help to find the employers who are willing to do it.
Yeah, I know that was a problem last summer.
Yes, ma'am.
Finding employers and also placing the young people in jobs. And we were very concerned about the age limit because there are the ones at 17 and 18, 19 that, you know, don't have any employment. So we just wanted to make sure that we could expand it so that we could touch them all. But you know, and I do know that's going to be a real challenge in placing these youth. So, you know, I would suggest just getting started early because it's a good thing. A lot of youth didn't really get jobs last year, and then some of them came in too late.
Yes.
And so I would just urge you to, you know, start early.
Let me be very, very candid with you. I think we're already behind, and we are in order to have the youth in the system, applications process, determining where they might best fit, get that front-end training so that they're ready to start right after the 4th of July. We are doing some catch-up right now, and this is a front agenda item for the mayor's chief of staff, who we work with directly on this item.
Yes, you certainly may. Okay. Here's your heart.
I want to thank you for being here tonight.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
I see you a lot in the community, and it's a great partnership, and I really appreciate you being here. When the mayor spoke at the State of the City address, she spoke very passionately, and she said she wanted to provide the youth with opportunity and hope. in being able to get them this type of employment. And my question is, I wanted to know, do you know the number of employers that you're going to be working with?
I'm sorry, Mr.
Do you have a number of employers that you're going to be working with?
No, I don't have that number at this time. This is an ongoing recruitment because we need to do a business outreach. When the mayor did her breakfast kickoff, and it was for the business community as we partnered with the chamber to do that. At that time, we used that as a sample with cards. Would you be interested in, would you hire? So I have already started compiling a list from the kickoff of businesses who said would either fund and hire, or would like to hire but can't fund. So we've got a starting list from that. The calls have already started coming in. I think as soon as last summer was over, I started getting parents calling in. Unfortunately, my number was the only number that appeared on the advertisement card, and it hasn't changed. So the calls and the emails are coming in from the parents saying, want to make sure we get ahead of start. Would you put me on the list so that as soon as you open up enrollment, I'm going to make sure that my child is positioned to do that. So there a lot of interest this year. I think we have a lot of commitment from a number of agencies that I think that are going to allow us to have a successful program. I think it bears well for us, the city, to do the job we need to do to make sure that services or opportunities like this meet the needs of the agreement that we have with Oakland Housing Authority, the business requirement for those that are hiring, but particularly making it a really good experience for the youth. Yeah. It's rewarding for me when I get either city departments and or employers who will send us a note or call and say, if, I'm going to use Johnny, is coming back next year, we want him back, and we want three or four who are interested like that similar program, and we get a number of those. So we know we're on the right track. I think the issue today is, as the commissioner mentioned, getting a much earlier start, making sure that we have those pieces in place early, and we have the capacity to handle the number of youth that I think we're going to have.
Great. I'd like to move the item.
Okay, I have a question. No, go ahead. You have a question, yes.
I want to commend staff for using salary savings for this type of program. Thank you. I really think that's excellent. Just pertaining to the fiscal piece, when you say 1,500 per youth, because we only had 39 known apply last year, if we don't make that many into the program, are we going to reduce the amount of funding we donate?
Yeah, we're going to pay for each referral.
Okay, thank you.
Which means we're going to work really hard.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to ask a question on sequestration, since that is something that we really can't ignore at the moment. But I am assuming that whatever the effects of sequestration are on the Housing Authority, that this $450,000 investment is not going to compromise our core mission. I just want to make sure that my assumption is right.
Your assumption, as I'm sitting in the seat today, and the time is 7 o'clock, is that it won't. What I'm concerned about with sequestration is next year's funding and our long-term funding, and mostly our long-term funding. This is one-time savings we have this year. We may not be here at all next year, John. It's just the reality. But it's something we can do this year.
Excellent answer.
And that's
perfect.
Thank you.
That's what we wanted to hear.
My statement.
Right.
I'll second the motion to move the item.
Okay. Been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? Abstentions? Hearing none, unanimously carried. We are funding jobs for youth.
Thank you so very much.
We are now moving on to item F, the consent calendar.
And that's items 2 through 4.
I'll move the consent calendar if there's no objections or questions.
move item two real quick.
Oh, I thought we already took that one.
We took one out.
We did.
Yeah. That was at the beginning. Oh.
Number one has been tabled. That's different.
Okay, so item two has been separated.
Okay.
So we're
three and four.
We have a motion for three and four. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion. We have a second. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Abstentions? Carries unanimously. Okay, so now we're going to move on to item F2.
Item F2 is consideration of a resolution authorizing the executive director to execute a contract with HD Supply in an amount not to exceed $150,000 for unit restoration and installation at 1737 15th Street, which is one of our vacant OP properties we're trying to restore. It's a demonstration program, and Mr. Bailey has been working with HD Supply along with Patricia Eisen to develop a way to test to see if this works, if we can get some economies of scale. Simultaneously, I think the only way we're going to address the work we need is also talking about bringing in a force account crew to try and do some of our unit rehabs, but we're not in agreement yet with the union on that, so we haven't brought that in. This is for one property, four units. They've bid to our regular specification and terms. We've done our own analysis against the cost, and we think if we can get our days down for our workers, we can actually do it very competitively in-house. This is to sort of demonstrate their ability. And that would conclude my report. I think I've covered everything, Mr. Bailey. Yeah.
This is the wrong item. I'm sorry, everyone. But I'm excited about this item, and I'm glad we're doing it, so I will move this item.
I'll second on this item. But can we
all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Any abstentions? Carries unanimously.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Okay, item G.
Item G are written communications.
It's recognition of people wishing to address
no
the commission.
Slips.
And we have no slips, and there is no one yelling in the audience, so we're going to move on to written communications.
Written communications. You have your usual monthly report. I just want to consolidate two figures for you because it came up last month about our OP units and the vacant versus the occupied. We have, I think, 176 units that are currently ready and available. Another section of the report, it says how many people are out looking at those units. We currently have 38 families out choosing units to lease one of them, and that leaves the gap. Filling the gap is the question, and we have a lease-up event on March 9th that is going to go on that I wanted you to be aware of. We're going to bring in over 400 families from all our site-based wait lists to send them out and lease them up. So what I thought, and Patricia Ice and I were talking about when we got the report, and she suggested maybe we do just a lease-up report for you as a table in here so it puts the numbers together so you don't have to go fishing for them. So we'll know where we are, and I think hopefully get some real lease-up. And, you know, the challenge for the units that we're rehabbing, which is going to be a couple hundred vacant at any point, we want to do those quickly and get them back online. And I'll talk more about some options with that related to sequestration later on in my diatribe. What I want to just let you know that is my biggest concern is to make sure when a unit is done, when it's ready and available, we have a family moving in. And I actually want us to get to where we're pre-leasing. So the families get time to give their current apartment landlord notice so they don't pay rent twice, which often happens with how it works, particularly on the public housing side. And I think if we can show them a unit and say, this is currently going under restoration, we expect it to be done on the 16th, you can move in on the 1st if you're willing to sign a lease, and this is what it'll look like, and show them the model finishes that we have. Okay. If we can get to that point, I think we're really doing it as well as you can possibly do it.
Okay.
We've had lots of meetings. I've had Mr. Bailey and I had a little mini retreat with Capital Improvement Department this past Thursday and kind of scoped out different things and challenges we're having in trying to make all this happen for them. And then we have the other side, which is the Leased Housing Department delivering the eligibility, and we have the Property Management Department delivering the suitability. So putting all those together is going to be kind of like the great orchestra, but I think we're going to find the solution. And the number I would want you to watch, and the number that really matters to me, is how many vacant and available units are out there and how many applicants matching them, because we should be leasing those as soon as possible. So that's the one epiphany of the monthly report. But if you have any other questions?
Yeah, Eric, I was just going to ask, do we have the, I mean, here you have a situation where the project management execution has got to be really on target. If you're pre-leasing the units, we don't want people camping on the sidewalk waiting to get in the house. So I am certain that you have a high confidence in our ability to do this, but I just...
Not yet, but we. But I
will. I just see these kinds of things, and I like to test the assumption a little bit just to make sure that we have some margin for error here, because...
At this point we do. We don't do that. Mm-hmm. It won't be until we get all these leased up, and then when we get notices and we know certain units are nearing completion, when they go through the final check, that we can turn them over and let property management know, and leased housing can refer someone over, and we can get the work done at getting someone, you know, through eligibility to lease the unit. We're not even there yet, but I like that to be the bar, and I think Steph knows that's my bar. That's where I want to go.
I see. So that's really the goal.
It's not what we're doing.
Trying to get there. Okay, perfect. Perfect. Yes.
So that's the end of the monthly report. We're here for any questions. Going through the written materials, I included the site plan for Lion Creek Crossing 5 because it's the final site plan. It's a site plan that was originally done in 1999, Phil, just guessing, for the Hope 6 grant that was awarded in 2000.
We had revised it around 2001.
Yeah. So this is the final, and I just thought it was kind of historic when I received it, and I emailed him back, can we call this the final one? Are we done with this? And we are. And this includes the senior development. I just wanted to make it a permanent part of the board package, so I put it in written. The next two things, one is I handed out, which is a second letter on sequestration, and the first one is a February 25th letter on sequestration. The second letter I handed out I thought was much more interesting. And then the first one, if there. On the top of the second page, one of the things that Deputy Assistant Secretary Sandy Enriquez is doing is recommending, she says, in addition to the streamlining efforts that are already underway, the department is seeking full fungibility for all agencies, regardless of PHA size. That, to me, is one of the most historic lines I've ever read in a HUD letter, because they took away fungibility many years ago, and it threw a number of agencies into financial turmoil. And Sandy knows this because she ran the Boston Housing Authority during that time. If she gets this approved, what it means is everyone has the same resources and ability to move money that we do. And that is a great gift to this country, in my humbled opinion. And I really just wanted to applaud her for putting that in there and saying, I'm going to put the one thing on the table that is the most significant to improve the lives of so many of the residents living in public housing. And doing it in the face of sequestration, or using that, saying you're going to get less, but you're going to have fungibility, is just a really smart move. Related to sequestration, we'll put this on the agenda for next month, and we hope to have a clearer picture of where we are and where we're going. My concern for us is, like so much of sequestration, isn't something that takes effect immediately, but the long-term impacts are real. I woke up on Thursday, and I realized that if nobody notices that sequestration happened, it becomes the new normal. And so we need to be prepared for the new normal.
Yes.
And so we're going to come back to you in April with some numbers of what it really means in terms of cuts. Some of the choices we may have to make about some of our local programs versus some of the OPI sites, and you know I mentioned the OPI sites. One of the things we can choose to do, which I would strongly recommend anyway, and had been considering, right now we have all our project-based vouchers on 100% of the units, but we can rent those at 60% AMI or below, and let the voucher holders who are on the tenant-based program, private landlords, get the tenant-based voucher, and we can keep those affordable, and we can actually change the income ranges, you know, so that we can serve a population of 30 or 40%, and then do it under the basically low-income housing tax credit type affordability, because that's what HUD put on the requirement for affordability. We put vouchers on because we wanted to and because we could, but if it comes down to whether we have vouchers available for someone in a tenant-based property now, I would rather rent OPI at an affordable rent and preserve the tenant-based voucher for the private, so we don't make anyone homeless.
What would the economic opportunity, what do you estimate it would actually be? Because it's going to depend on how many people would like to move with their voucher, right?
Well, right now we've had over 500 people in OPI move using the tenant protection voucher. not the project-based. So they've taken the vouchers we got from HUD, and it's 540 or something, I think, at the last, you sent me the email, Anna Gwen, I don't remember. Yeah, 540. So we've had 540 vacant units within OP that are now been rehabbed, yet, and some of them
And how many units did we have overall there?
1,554.
Yeah, okay.
So even if, and we're talking about permanent, we're talking about.
So that's one-third.
Yeah,
right?
One-third of the apartments, yeah. And we would expect more, and we're going to move people around into rehabs anyway. Once we get through that process, what we'll look at how many vouchers we have and whether we want to continue or come back to the board and say we want to change some of the recommendations and say maybe take 40 units per amp and make them non-subsidized.
So they're
within the affordability. And then that's 40 more vouchers we have for families out in the private market.
Okay.
So it's a way to serve more people and serve people differently. It doesn't change the economics much of OP because of the payment. It will be similar. I mean, we won't lose that much money. And I think we can support it. But that's some of the places we're looking for savings. And we'll look again this year and this year's budget about anything like car purchases or anything that we're going to cut. I've looked at them, and many staff need new cars this year, and I know they do. But whether we can afford it or not, it's kind of making those choices first.
Yes, Commissioner.
Sorry, just to reiterate, make sure I understood it. When you said making a unit non-subsidized, to deflect any economic impact, you would see what is the rent that the tenant is paying. As long as if it's a higher AMI unit, then that's where you can unsubsidized unit and stick that subsidy to like a 20 or 30% AMI unit.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically.
So what happens in the public housing program, it's anyone who is up to 80% AMI. For the affordability of OPI, we did a more rigorous assumption. We said 60% AMI or lower. And we really did that for the bonding and for the loan housing tax credit, because that's usually that rate. So if we wanted to go in for an application for a chunk of them, do a low-income housing tax credit, would allow us to, everything would conform. That's what HUD says you need to keep them affordable as. They've already given us the vouchers which are already in use, either in OPI or out in the private market.
Okay.
We put them project-based, our own vouchers, onto the site because we got the new vouchers, we had that to do, but we don't have to do that. We can choose to not put our vouchers on OPI site and let it rent at a rent that is reasonable for someone at 50% AMI or 40% AMI. And we can set those amounts and those rent amounts that are really come from the tax credit program. They have the rental limits and say at certain sites we want to designate two units at this site, one unit at this site, and scatter them throughout and rent them separately from the Section 8 program.
Here's the irony of the decreasing FMRs are kind of benefiting us here.
Yeah.
It's decreasing the economic impact of
some. I know the city wanted to know if we wanted to contribute a couple $100 to a study on that, and I was reluctant because of what you just said. I'm like, well, I'm just, right now we're okay.
What did you just say? What's a FMR or whatever?
Fair market rents.
What's that? Fair market rents.
Sorry. Yeah, I mean, but I will say
for everything.
I will say here's like another kind of political irony of this. Like, the more that housing authorities around the country do what you just talked about and proposing to do what you are proposing, and the more that we kind of cut back from programs, the less of a visual, invisible, tangible effect of sequestration, the more likely the national dialogue is going to be, you know, it really wasn't that bad. You know, because the creative gyrations that you're doing are minimizing the impact. Mm-hmm. That is then going to force a different conversation of we're not seeing people kicked out, we're not seeing this doomsday scenario that the federal administration talked about.
Yeah.
And so, and you know, $85 billion, that's not too bad.
It is. And there's been a couple of agencies that quickly announced X, Y, and Z that where I thought were really political announcements. And I want to be careful not to make untrue broad statements, particularly when we know we've planned for it, HUD's allowed us the flexibility to do that.
Mm-hmm.
That we don't intend to cut a voucher on a single household in Oakland, and that we'll do everything in the world we can do before we do that. And that's my commitment.
Right.
I'm not going to impact a currently subsidized family.
Yeah.
But what I think it may mean down the road is we have to think very, very more, we have to think more strategically how we're going to serve more people.
Yes.
Because we're not going to be able to do it just from increased funding from HUD, because
exactly.
That's not going to be there.
Exactly.
We're going to have to find different ways. And having units that are not subsidized that we manage affordably for families is a way to do that. And this is one portfolio that can be mixed up in a healthy way. And you know, the chair had one comment when I mentioned to him this is one option we need to consider, is it also helps people who are graduating off the Section 8 program
right.
in these sites. So when they get to zero half, they don't really even have to move.
Exactly. So now, Eric, just to make sure I understand this, so this is kind of interesting. Let's just assume that 500 people living in the scattered sites decided to move to other locations, opening up 500 scattered site units. So they're taking their vouchers with them. So now we are able to rent those at, say, 60% of AMI, 50, whatever we decide to do. So the net effect of that in aggregate on OHA, I mean, I'm talking aggregate, in other words, once the subsidiaries have all rolled up, would that be the same as if we were given 500 additional vouchers or similar to that?
No, we'll lose some money. We'll lose some money because we're going to rent them at an affordable level. But we're not going to lose as much money as we did under the public housing program. And that's why the portfolio can't support doing this a whole bunch of them.
But it can support
some of it. And what it means is then for every voucher that is not being used by OP, we can issue a voucher to the tenant program, the tenant voucher program, and serve someone in that. And it's a balancing act, but it's a way we can continue to serve more people without more federal money. The question the question will be, and we've got to sort through it, is what are the rent income levels and rent levels we'll target if we do this?
Yeah, okay. I think that'll be an interesting analysis
and how much
to look
at. How much can the portfolio support?
Yeah, no, this is good thinking.
Yeah, and the problem, I think, is until we get near the end of these rehabs, the portfolio can't support anything, and I think that's 3 years out. But I want the board to start thinking about 3 years out of how we can handle this.
Yeah, good. Commissioner Montgomery.
Concerning the people impact, if I'm understanding you correctly, I understand renting to the higher income 40 to 60%. And then what you're saying is that we will still be able to open up our waiting list and continue to serve the lower income families that we do at the same number that we do?
Hopefully, it'll depend on the funding from HUD for the Section 8 program, whether overall we can do the same number. And that's what I'm saying. It may be that HUD comes back and says, rather than 13,000 some odd Section 8 vouchers, we're going to cut you to 12,000. And those are going to be 1,000 vouchers that go away. Then the question becomes, how can we serve more people if we don't have that federal funding from HUD? And what I'm saying is, if we own the unit through OP and we can rent it at an affordable rate, for anyone below 60% AMI, and we don't really need to use a Section 8 on 100% of that portfolio, and it frees up a Section 8 vouchers for someone to go out and use it in the private market, then that might be something that we want to really consider doing.
Because I think that's where the news is the amount of families who desperately need subsidies and are not going to be able to get subsidies because of what the housing authorities have to do to track.
And housing authorities who are not prepared right now, and housing authorities have two options. They can either stop their wait list, stop issuing vouchers completely, and then with existing vouchers, do a shallower subsidy if they get funding cuts to serve the same number of people, or do cut the number of vouchers in the street and serve the fewer people for the same level. And those are really the two choices that we're left with on that program.
And as you can imagine, that's going to just really impact homeless service providers, transitional houses, and even the rental market. It's that's where the bad news comes from.
I agree. And I think part of the reason I'm trying to be to wait until November or April to really come back to you and have a conversation is I think we'll know in 2 weeks what congressional initiatives are undergoing. And we can come back and have maybe a more informed conversation about where we are in our programs as opposed to the overall sequestration.
Are we able to perhaps increase the number of Shelter Plus Care vouchers when we
do
this?
No, that's a specialty program. You know, that comes through the county, and so those got a 9% cut probably.
So I know you've thought of this, and your staff knows as well, but you know, in some parts of Oakland, a 50-67% AMI unit is hard to lease up.
Yeah.
And so the more we peel off those subsidies and rely on a higher AMI, the more we are presupposing that we're going to need to either have those units be in certain areas that we know that can hit that 80% AMI number, or that property is just going to cash flow less because mm-hmm. we're going to have to go down to 30-40% AMI.
Yeah.
So that's the game.
It's an interesting market. We have units that are way above in areas and units that are way below, and we live off the average. It'll be a challenge for the portfolio, but I think we need to think about how we can make use of it if this becomes a reality, and not just take the HUD subsidy and you know, try and serve some more people with the same amount of money. The last thing in your packet are just the meeting schedules, a couple notes. We have canceled the 25th, and we're going to hold a meeting on April 8th, and that'll be when we have the final plan. We have the April 26th meeting is, I think, canceled. I think the 25th is actually Cesar Chavez Day, if I'm right. And then 25th April meeting, we won't need the 22nd because we will have had one just a week, 2 weeks prior. Monday the 27th, that's actually Memorial Day on May. And so we're going to do it the week prior on May 20th. Rest date pretty much the same. Yeah, the May 27th regular meeting is going to be actually canceled, and it's actually going to be May 20th the week prior.
And April 22nd
is just canceled because we're doing one.
So we X that out.
X that out completely.
Okay.
And because we're doing one on April 8th.
Right. Right. Okay. Cool.
All right. A couple other announcements I wanted to go through. One is we have one cadet and two explorers who are going to be attending the 2013 Central Valley Explorer Competition, March 15th and 17th. I don't know if they're still in the room, but I wish them luck. Chief, I want a trophy. OHA staff training retreat. We have our OHA staff training retreat. It's 2 days, the 6th and 7th, and staff have been really working themselves like I can't believe, and they're very excited. And particularly Greer has been involved and working really hard with the culture committee who's putting it on. And Julie Christensen upstairs in my office has been just heroic at what she's put on. So we're very excited. If you're able to stop by anytime Thursday afternoon, we're going to have the final awards and service recognitions on Thursday afternoon. We'll probably start around 2 o'clock and they'll go to about 3:30.
Okay.
So if you can stop by, it's at the Scottish Rite Temple, and that's at 1547 Lakeside. And we'd love to see you. This past week, we had a visit from the LA HUD office. The field director for that office, KJ Brockington, came up. She toured our sites last Tuesday, and we took her around. And then on Wednesday morning, we spent with her staff going over some work she's doing on how the field office can better assess housing authorities. And Ed Moses, who's the head of the District 9 and 10 of HUD, had actually asked me if I would, you know, let him come up, or if I would talk to them about it. I told him I wouldn't go down there, but if they came up here, I'd be happy to, as long as she'll do a tour, then I'll listen through her stuff. And she did. We had a good time. And she's a very good person and a very smart person. And she's worked really hard within HUD to try and pull stuff that's in their business system out and up to where the people who monitor housing authorities can monitor them against risk, which is a new approach for HUD. It's something that coincides with our work in the MTW assessment tool. And so Ed Moses thought it would be a good idea for her to talk to us about it, even though we're not really subject to what she's doing. Plus, he also, you know, he knew we would provide them honest, real advice on how they could make it work. And I think that thanks to our staff, we did. And we're still looking at some of their background data for them to see if we can help them interpret it and make it work in a way. HUD's had the same kind of epiphany we all had, which is they have to learn to do more with less, and part of the thing they have to do is figure out how they can find where the problems are, where are the risks in the public housing authorities, and how can they intervene earlier to help them get on the right track. And that's what this tool is supposed to do. And I was personally really impressed with the work she'd done. Moving on, we have also the NARA Legislative Conference is coming up. Phil and Patricia will be with you at that. You. Janet and I are going to CLOFA the week prior to cover that. And I think it's going to be an interesting week and an interesting time to be in D.C.
Yes,
so I'm look forward to the reports coming back from NARA because it changes every minute there.
Yes,
and that it's going to be the time they're really fighting about what they can do with sequestration, so we should learn something. And it's a good time to do the meetings. I have put a request into Congresswoman Lee's office to get a meeting. I'll let you know when I hear back. I ran into Catherine Kwan at the opening of the Oakland Housing Assistance Center, and they're on it. We just haven't heard yet. Okay? We have also a new finance director, Tracy Stabler. Would you like to raise your hand and say hello? She's got a great background, and I'm thrilled she's here. The other thing I want to let you know is on that route, HUD has conditionally approved, done a conditional approval of our FDS, mm-hmm. our financial data submission, from last September. They didn't really even look at it until February. We're currently finalizing our 2012 audit to do the actual final. These are the unaudited we do in September, which I think there's no reason to do that at all, and it only strengthens my argument about why they make us do that. There's no reason. HUD didn't even look at it until we're trying to put our audited financials into the system. It makes no sense. But I'm grateful for the approval, and I thank Janet for negotiating that. So consequently, we're now finalizing our annual report because we have to wait until that, and that just came in today. So the chair and I are working at getting the annual report out. It is going to continue our mission of getting paperless and driving people to the internet and online version, and I think it's graphically really well done. Greer's worked real hard to try and come up with yet another innovative design, and I think she has. It's all around opening doors.
Thank you, Greer.
Just as sequestration is closing them, we're trying to open them.
Yes.
So that look to that to come out shortly. Lastly, as a surprise to two of our staff members who are here, Patricia Eisen and Carol Duplessis, who worked one weekend to submit for the second time a grant for $250,000 for the Capital Fund Safety Grant, which we got a letter an hour ago that we were awarded.
Yeah.
So Lockwood Gardens gets $250,000, of which the chief is already, you know, busy trying to spend through RFPs. But I am thrilled.
Wonderful.
And I don't know what finally prompted them to think, well, maybe giving some money to Oakland for some public safety is a good idea.
Yeah.
but they did, and I thank Dominic Bloom, who signed the letter, and I will send her a thank you note tomorrow.
Thank you. Shout out to Anna Gwen.
And Anna Gwen, who worked the weekend and put it online in USA Grants. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's much needed money for that community, and I think it's going to hugely benefit them to have the systems they're proposing installed. We'll be back before the board momentarily with spending that money. Even before we've signed the contract.
Thank you.
So the lesson is when Eric says work the weekend, don't say no.
No, to their credit, I just suggested that we didn't get it last year because I think it's because they were thinking all of the MTW agencies didn't need any more resources. And I think maybe they've had an epiphany that we are serving more people because we serve, you know, one of the points I make over and over again is we're serving more people today than we ever have in the history of this organization.
Yes.
And I think we just need to keep that in the forefront. It is.
Yes.
I can't tell you what the MTW office and the people in HUD who know we're serving 109% of our baseline know what that means. Most MTW agencies are not doing above 100, and we're doing 109. We do it in one of the most difficult rental markets in the country, and we do it with some of the most innovative programs. And they, I think, have really gotten to where they understand how solid we are and so much of what we do. And we know we have some things we got to get better at, and we will. I think that they wanted to participate in a way in some of our success, particularly around trying to address some crime at Lockwood. So I'm grateful for the $250,000. And that concludes my report.
Thank you.
I had a quick question. I noticed the California Hotel waiting list is closed. Excuse me, Chair. Are they leasing up now?
The California Hotel.
And Savoy, how are we doing?
The Savoy is still undergoing renovation in one half, so they're not leasing up yet. The other half is occupied. The California Hotel, Michelle Hassan can tell you where she is in placing Section 8 vouchers, project based vouchers on the property.
So we're very, good evening again, Commissioner. So we're very happy to report that we finished our last inspections last Friday and all the units have passed HQS. And we are actively completing eligibility screening. So we're definitely on target to lease up those units pretty quickly.
Thank you.
And the Savoy is also, as you can see, on an eligibility. We're doing a lot of eligibility work for those. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Team is working very hard.
Thank you.
Good. Okay. Do we have a motion to move to closed session?
No, we have commission reports.
Oh, we have commission reports, right. Where am I here? Okay. Do we have, now I have lost.
We're item nine, reports from commission committees.
Yes, reports of commission committees. Did we, yes, Commissioner Nagaraj.
So the Board of Commissioners Ad Hoc Development Policy Committee has published a draft development policy and welcomes public comment. The Board of Commissioners Ad Hoc Development Policy Committee began meeting in the fall of 2012 to create a development policy document to help guide the authority in future development activities. We've issued a draft for comment. We'll be holding a public meeting on Tuesday evening, March 12, 2013, at 6:30 p.m. here to hear public comments in the draft policy. The public is invited to attend and provide comments, and written comments are also welcome. You're welcome.
Beautiful. Okay. Do we then have any announcements by commissioners?
I'd like to acknowledge one of our seasoned RAB members in the audience. Thank you for coming.
Very good. Okay. Hearing no more, then let us, we move to adjournment. We have a motion for adjournment. Very good. Then let us, we'll take 10 minutes, come back for a closed session.